and you're listening to the Forecast F1 podcast, where we're about to dissect an action-packed British Grand Prix, but not before introducing our two guests this weekend. Or, well, I'm not sure, Sam, whether I still need to introduce you. I think people are already used to your voice. But yeah, Sam's here with me. Sam, how are you doing?
I'm doing well. Trying to recover after the race that we just watched.
I was going to say, recently we've been saying that there's plenty to talk about, but I think that mm-hmm. counts for this weekend as well. So our other guest is from Kenya. It's Tracy. Tracy, how are you doing? How was your weekend? How did you watch the race?
Today is probably one of the best weekends I've had this season yet. I'm so happy with the results, and I can't wait to talk about it today.
Well, we're very happy to have you on as a guest, and I'm also very eager to get going and talk about this race. Let's talk about the weekend slightly in order. So we had the British Grand Prix this weekend. We watched training sessions with some mixed weather, and we had some dry or moist dry sessions on the Friday, and then on Saturday, FP3 was quite wet, which would be a bit of a forecast for the rest of the weekend, because there were some changeable conditions, especially during the race, which was one of the factors that made it so interesting. But I think it would be fun to talk about qualifying a little bit first. And I think that was already a good start of the weekend, wasn't it, Sam?
Yeah, absolutely. Like you had mentioned, the practice session definitely foreshadowed what was going to be an up and down weather weekend. And the qualifying definitely started in that way as well. We did see, I would say for Alpine, obviously Pierre Gasly, he was in a situation where he was already going to be starting at the back of the grid. He had taken multiple power unit components. So he was starting in a position that we weren't going to see, regardless of where he ended up. His result was going to be at the back. But I would say, I mean, the most obvious thing, if we're highlighting, first of all, the Q1 session, would have been Perez, obviously out in Q1. What was everyone's thoughts, first of all, when it came to that situation? Tracy, maybe we start with you.
I was shocked, especially when he got into that corner and made that turn. I did not expect his car to perform that way. And considering he also has a performance contract going on, I was expecting so much performance from him, especially during qualifying, at least to make up for the mistakes that he's been making. But nonetheless, that was a terrifying qualifying from Sergio Perez for me. But I believe maybe he can get better with time.
Looks like the pressure is getting a little bit to him. Last few weeks have not been great. I think that's a fair summary. And it was interesting. We had Q1, which looked a little bit, track was a little bit wet. So everybody started on inters, but we saw that actually the racing line was quite dry already. So everybody switched pretty quickly to put slicks on. And I was curious to see if anybody was not would not be able to keep it on track. And it's not been the first time that it's Sergio that has trouble doing that. But it was quite, I don't know what way to describe it, but hearing him come on the radio
unexpected,
asking to be pushed back on the track, it was
I think it also alludes to, like you had mentioned, the pressure and the situation that he's currently under. I mean, we all know typically with Red Bull, when it comes to performance, if you're not cutting it, then cutting is the operative word that usually ends up happening. And he did sign for a 1-year contract for 2025, but you have to start to question at this point, especially with the pressure that they are under as of most recently with Mercedes, and now with the upcoming results with Mercedes and with McLaren, is the mounting overwhelming decision looming in the background as to whether or not we see Perez in 2025 or even potentially to after the summer break. I mean, that's a question as well. I know Liam Lawson is doing some tests, I believe, next week. And I mean, that can be something that is standard, but let's not forget that last year that did take place for Ricardo, and then we obviously saw the result of him moving into a Racing Bulls position. So I think that we historically have seen Perez in situations where he has struggled a bit over a few races, but he always seems to bounce back. right now this is a critical period for him where they really need him to step up to the plate and earn some much needed points for the team. And I think the next two races are really going to determine potentially where they're going to lean moving forward. That would be my opinion, I think, at this stage for Perez. So it was a disappointing result.
Well, supposedly he even has a 2-year contract with clauses in it. But mm-hmm. I mean, it's going to be very interesting to see. And it's funny because people are now talking about Ricardo, who a couple of races ago we were also talking about whether he would even make it past the summer break. So a lot of interesting potential things that could happen there. If it were for me to decide, I would just put Yuki in that seat, in that second Red Bull seat. But anyway, it's not up to me. not only saw Perez actually making it into the gravel, Verstappen did the same very thing. It was just that he was able to keep the car going, but not without some damage to the floor, which would later, I think going into Q2, we could see that he wasn't on a knife's edge as he has been recently. And I think that was already a sign into what we would see in the third session of qualifying, which I think was very, very exciting. We already saw when the first flying laps were set that looked like both the Mercedes and the McLarens were very, very quick. We actually had on the first flying laps, we saw a, if I'm not mistaken, the order first was Russell, Norris, Hamilton, then Piastri, Verstappen. And actually, also want to mention Hülkenberg there, who had a great mm-hmm. qualifying yeah. session again. I mean, he's been, I don't know what he's been having for breakfast these days, but it's incredible how he's been performing. And I mean, I don't even recall him being such a strong qualifier from his, let's say, his first part of his career. But he's just been doing great in it, Haas. And I don't know, it's even kind of, I don't know how Sauber's going to perform next year, but I see that this year they're not performing as good as the Haases, so it's even somewhat unfortunate to see him go to another team next year, because it seems to be a great, great fit, him and the Haas. But anyway, I'm drifting off. We saw a good first set of flying laps in that Q3 session, and then the second set of laps was even more exciting. What do you guys think?
I was saying the second part of the qualifying session was also interesting, especially with Charles. When he didn't get a chance to get into Q1, right. I was surprised. And I was expecting, I don't know, I think the last lap to the end of the qualifying session was intense for him, to a point where he couldn't manage to get he thought he was safe, and then the other people who were still taking their turns sort of like got higher points than him, and the conditions of the race had changed at that time, because it was a bit wet and then it got drier. No, it was a bit dry and then it got wetter over time. So yeah,
you're right. Leclerc didn't make it out in Q2, and then actually I completely skipped mentioning that Sargeant actually made it into that Q2 session as well.
Yeah.
That's right, over qualifying Perez again. Yeah,
it was nice. It's about time.
Yeah, again.
Yeah. Yeah. And I also, when you're talking about Nico changing his team, we also had an announcement this weekend with Oliver joining the team.
Right. Let's not skip that. Good point, yeah.
Yeah.
No, that's going to be very exciting.
It was fascinating. It was fascinating to see that he got a chance to finally be in an F1 seat, despite his performance in F2, with people saying that a weekend in F1 is way more important than than winning a championship in F2. I was expecting, you know, since we have another winner, the championship lead currently, I was expecting that he was sort of like getting a seat better earlier than Oliver. But I think his performance last time when he took the seat in Ferrari gave him a lot of points in F1 to sort of like have eyes on him to get a seat for next year, which was really fascinating. And I like the boy. I hope he gets to perform next year so well.
It's definitely going to be very interesting to see Ollie in that Haas next year. He had a bit of a difficult weekend actually this weekend in the F2 series. He DNF'd on the sprint race, and then I think he finished seventh on the feature race. But and actually we got a first win for Kimi Antonelli on the sprint race this weekend. So that was also interesting. But you're looking forward to seeing Ollie on the grid, Sam?
Yeah, absolutely. I think that Haas has a lot of potential and they've recently really stepped it up. I think they came with a pretty strong upgrade package once again. I think under they with their new leadership, you can really see the results in a positive way. It is going to be unfortunate that Nico is leaving, because even K-Mac, I hope that K-Mac finds a seat next year, because I do really love how punchy he is as a driver. Like, he is a true racing driver. He just goes out, and even this weekend he really tried his best. So I think that Ollie has a really great, the future is bright for him, and I think the future is bright for Haas. So I think altogether it is definitely a good decision for both sides. There is a pretty strong discussions going on that Esteban is actually going to fill the second seat in Haas for next year. We'll see if that actually gets revealed, but that is something that may potentially further add some strength to the team. So yeah, a lot of optimism, I think, for the rest of the season for them, although I don't want to jinx that by saying it, but I also think that the next year looks pretty interesting for them as well.
Yeah, it definitely does. And back to our qualifying, because I guess we're all eager to get into the race. But what I think was very nice in qualifying is that after, in the Q3 session, after those first laps were set, we saw a very good battle between the Mercedes, because initially Russell did set the fastest flying lap. And then in the last set of flying laps, just before before ending the session, actually, Hamilton improved on that time of Russell, was on P1, but then Russell got back at him and set it on pole. And I thought that was very exciting to watch, and a very good result for Russell, who actually in qualifying has been doing very, very well in the past few weeks.
Yeah,
absolutely. Very consistent. It was great to see Mercedes at the top once again. And for Russell, great performance. And yeah, three British drivers at the British Grand Prix. I mean, I don't think it gets much better than that when it comes to a qualifying session for them.
Yeah, I think it was the first time ever in the history of F1 that three British drivers qualified at the British Grand Prix at the first three slot spots. So yeah, that was exciting. Although, talking about Russell, although I don't want to skip the first half of the race, but he didn't have a very exciting, it was exciting for the first part, I would say, but having to retire the car at lap 34, I think, what was it, issues with the water management system, that was very unfortunate for him.
You're so random as well.
Yeah. But I guess that brings us into the race already. So if you girls want to go ahead and talk about it, then please be my guest.
I know Tracy's excited to talk about it. So why don't we start with you, Tracy? How do you feel after watching that race? What are some highlights?
That race was one of the best races we've had since 2021, since Abu Dhabi 2021. As a Lewis Hamilton fan, it's not there. As a Lewis Hamilton fan, that was one of the most relief I've had in a while. I cannot believe he finally won the British Grand Prix after such a drought. The drought is over. I'm so excited. And it was a really fascinating race with so many strategies going into it, and then all of it sort of changing with the weather and the different tire combinations that people took. I was so surprised when Perez started with hards, but everybody has their choice. And I don't know, it had a lot of, I was surprised there was no incident where we needed to have a safety car. I was predicting that at the start. And I was also hoping that we'd have a lot, we did have a lot of action, but I did not expect it to end as peacefully as it did. I was expecting a lot of crashes, but it did happen in the first lap in turn one, or was it turn two? The Williams car crashed as well as Albon, and Nico had to leave the track for a while, which was unfortunate for someone like K-Mag. Was it K-Mag or was it Hulkenberg? One of them.
I think it was K-Mag. Yeah, you're right.
It was K-Mag.
I'm not 100% sure, actually. But what you're saying there is a good point. It's like, it's funny because we've seen a couple of very good races this year, and some of them actually because of basically weather conditions. I think for example, Canada was one of them where we had changeable weather, but we also had we had two safety cars. Then we've seen Austria, which was interesting, not specifically because of the weather, but because of safety cars. And actually now we got a race with changeable weather conditions, but you're right, no real crashes, no real safety cars. Mm-hmm. It was just good racing and good, basically a good fight on calling the right pit stops at the right moment. And I think there was a couple of drivers that made calls that were spot on, and there were others that... that basically led them to lose a lot of positions. I think the first one that comes to mind was during the first time when they had to go on Inters, and McLaren waited very long, and we had Norris and Piastri at the front, and I guess the team knew that they didn't want a double stack, but I was surprised that they didn't put then Norris into the pits one lap earlier. If they would have done it like that, Norris one lap earlier and then Piastri
later,
it would have been all right, but they waited for too long, and basically that destroyed Piastri's race. Then on the other hand, we saw drivers like, well, I guess Hamilton being the right example. I mean, in the end, he also wins the race, but it already started out with being spot on with predictions. I mean, when the race started, I think it was on the first lap or the second lap where Bono came on the radio and said that he was expecting rain in 25 minutes. So I set my clock at it, and it was exactly 24 and a half minutes later when it started dripping a little bit on the camera lenses at around lap 15. It was like just very slight light drops. And then later on in lap 18, it started to rain a little bit harder. And it was, I mean, we all know Hamilton's very good in the rain. I think at the moment when it started dripping a little bit, he also made an overtake on Russell. And from then onward, his race got going. And it was, it was more or less faultless.
I think it was a fantastic call by Hamilton. And also just great teamwork all around for Mercedes. You really saw the strength there when everybody was just kind of working in perfect unison at that point in time. For that first call, like you were saying, Anton, I mean, we knew going in when they kept on describing that rain was going to happen, that anytime that plays a part, it's really going to apply pressure on the strategic element. You know, who's going to come in first? Who's going to react? And so when it came to Mercedes, I felt like when Hamilton came out and said it's not the right time for Inters, and then they made that decision when it was the perfect opportunity to go in. And that, I think that decision was the biggest reason why he won the race. I think that was the biggest contributing factor.
Was key,
there were other elements as well, but that was the key moment. And I mean, if he had decided to stay out one lap, or even if he had decided to come in earlier, I think we wouldn't have been seeing him take the podium on the top spot. I mean, going to McLaren, of course, it was disappointing to see the calls. I was questioning and scratching my head when I saw Lando. I believe it was lap 26 when Max and both Mercedes went in for the pits, but it was the secondary lap. And I agree with you, Anton, it's a very good point that you make. Like, had they have put Lando at the same lap on 26, we would have had a potential where then you bring Piastri in on 27 and he wouldn't have been so far behind, because Piastri also, I think, had a really, really good chance of finishing either in first or second as well. He could have given a run for the money, because both McLarens were really strong when the rain hit. And I mean, they have arguably the fastest car on the track at this point in time. So the podium potential for those two drivers was literally in the team's hands. And I think that, you know, the first strategic error was being more reactive and as opposed to being ahead and maybe making a quicker call. I think that sometimes when it comes to McLaren and some of the races that we've seen recently where they've had an opportunity to finish in a stronger position than they have, I mean, they've still done well, but there's been certain decisions that they have made. I think that sometimes they lack, Julian Palmer actually made a really good point. He said that they lack decisiveness recently when it comes to certain strategic elements in the races that really sometimes determine where they stand on the podium. I think this is another example of it. So unfortunate. That was the first call. Obviously, we'll get into the others, but that was my thought process when it came to the first one. They really hung Piastri out to dry.
Yeah, and I would have even say that it was quite late on all of those aforementioned teams like Mercedes and McLaren, because you saw that Verstappen going in actually one lap before Norris and the Mercedes double stack. Verstappen gained a lot of time there. Actually, Sainz also went in. Didn't see him gain that much time, but that actually brings me to Ferrari, who actually they weren't the only ones, because the same happened to Perez as to Leclerc when there was some light drops of rain at the beginning around I don't know exactly which lap it was, but I think it must have been around lap 20, I think, when both Leclerc and Perez already went to Inters way too early, that basically undid their whole race. Because actually, yeah, I mean, Perez was at the back anyway, but Leclerc, he had a great start of the race. I mean, he qualified 11th, as we had mentioned, and he overtook, he was 8th, I think, at some point. And basically, yep, by making that wrong call going on the Inters, which I guess, I mean, I understand they wanted to offset his strategy against the rest of the grid, but it was the wrong call. But all of that shows how important it is to make the right calls. And yeah, I agree. I think Mercedes had it. I mean, they actually had the Russell and Hamilton were far apart enough to double stack, and Norris and Piastri just weren't. So I guess I don't know if McLaren was looking at what Mercedes was doing, but where Mercedes actually had the time frame to do the double stack, McLaren didn't, so they should have already seen that one lap earlier. But anyway, I guess that's what happens, and that's why we got a very exciting result, but not before we actually saw a very interesting last part of the race, where after going off the rain tires, and Norris and Hamilton went on softs, Verstappen went on hards, and I think 12 laps before the end, we saw that we were going to have a very, very interesting last part of the race.
Yeah, Max came with a lot of speed in the last part of the race, which was crazy, especially when he got his hard tires. I was so scared for a minute there, because he kept gaining on pace and he kept moving so fast from the position that he was in. But luckily for us, I guess, we had enough pace ahead of it. But I think the issue with Max this weekend was the flaw that he had. They said they repaired the flow, but I don't think the flow that they put in was what they were expecting to use this weekend to sort of like get the enough strategy to win. So I feel like if they had the flow that they had in the beginning, they could have been competitive enough to actually be at the fight for P1 this weekend. And I also think that, as you said, the decision that Perez made. For Perez, I feel like when he had the hards at the beginning, the data that they collected at the first part of the race, I feel like the racing conditions of the first part of the race were almost similar to the racing conditions at the end of the race. So the data that they collected at the first part was what helped them sort of like get a view of whether they should go for hards or softs in the last part. And, you know, Max didn't really have enough, a new soft tire to go with. So the decision highly dependent on the data that they collected from Perez in the beginning of the race.
Yeah, I think that's a good point. That's a fair point. And it was quite exciting, because I think at first it looked like Norris and Verstappen were both gaining on Hamilton. But then a couple of laps later, it was actually, you could see that Verstappen was really gaining on Norris. He overtook him. And then, I think that was like about five or four laps before the end. And there was about a gap of, I don't know, 2.5 seconds between Hamilton and Verstappen, which in the end was too big a gap, too short a race for him to get towards Hamilton. But it was interesting because of the tire offset and not knowing how well that soft tire would hold on. But in the end it did. And like you said, I mean, it for Hamilton must have been such a relieving result to begin with, and then to do it at your home Grand Prix. I mean, not only that, I think he's now the only driver who's won at 9 different occasions on one track. Mm-hmm. So that's another record for him to set with this.
I actually have a list of all the records that he's breaking this weekend. I don't know, let me see.
It is incredible.
It is a long list.
Yeah,
it was interesting also to hear him. Sorry.
Oh, I was just going to say, if you have a few of them, I'd love to hear some of the records that he's broken.
Ah, okay. Let me search. I saw it in one of the pages, but we can keep talking about it and then. But sure. I know the 104 win. He was able to is like the first driver to get to win to get 104 podiums and wins, I guess. And then we also have he became the first driver to ever win in F4 to win in F1 after completing 300 races. He broke he has the most podiums in F1 currently at 199. So we're waiting for another win, another podium, so that he can get to 200. So that's interesting. And those are just some of the few that we have.
That's pretty incredible. I mean, even seeing him after, it was, it was clearly a very emotional moment for him. And hearing on the radio too, I definitely put a big smile on my face, regardless, just to hear Bono in his iconic statement, "Get in there, Lewis," and saying how much he wanted to be able to say that, and hearing Lewis choking up on the radio, and then seeing him embrace his father at the end. I mean, it was definitely a well-deserved race for Hamilton. I think also one thing to go back is yes, the softs that you had mentioned, Anton, I think all in all, the race for him as a whole was a fantastic race for him. Being able to also maintain those softs and towards the end of the race was a challenge for both him and Lando. You could see them that the degradation was very clear, the struggle that they had. And for Lando, obviously, it wasn't effective, because clearly Max had the better strategy in hand with the hards and was able to overtake him. And for Lewis, I mean, he was able to make the right calls this weekend, work with his team, and also manage to weather the storm, literally and figuratively, to secure the win. So, yeah, it was very deserving. And interestingly enough, I mean, in that second pit call for McLaren, Oscar had gone to mediums. And we saw Oscar actually putting on some really, really quick laps at the end of the race as a result with the strength of the medium tire. So, yeah, one could wonder if they had made the call for Lando to be on mediums, if he would have been in a different situation, if potentially Lewis would have been in a different situation. But I think ultimately, one thing's for certain, it's turned into such an exciting season. And for the most part in this race, I mean, we saw the front 5-6 literally less than 2 seconds apart from each other for the most part, and all the way into the end. And it really, really has made it thrilling. We've seen time and time again over the last several races, different podium winners. And I think each one has been an emotional ending as well. So it's been a pleasure to talk about it during the podcast, and it's also, as a fan, just a thrill to see.
Yeah, and I think going back to, you mentioned the radio of Hamilton after the race, but I already had a big smile on my face when I heard him tell Bono in lap 39 to just leave him to it and not talk.
Yeah.
That put a smile on my face too. And
yeah,
very good communication there. And you're mentioning Piastri there. I would even dare to say that if McLaren wouldn't have messed up his race earlier, he might have had a good shout for a win even there, because him and Norris were very close to one another. Then again, I think they made the wrong call with that second or the pit stops when we went to slicks again, because where Hamilton and Verstappen went in, it was again Norris who was left out for one more lap. Then had a slow pit stop too. It was 4.5 seconds. So there was several parts where McLaren messed it up, and I think either one of their drivers could have won it. Talking about less fortunate teams. Although before I'm going to mention Alpine, I wanted also to mention the little slip that Magnussen had at one point, where he was very, very close to losing the car and basically getting into the barrier, or hitting one of the poles there. I don't know, was it the pit lane entry pole, or there was a very close call. And I think we haven't mentioned it yet, but Gasly wasn't even, you said that he had he had 50 grid place penalty, but he wasn't even able to start the race to begin with. So even though they had a couple of good races or point scoring races the last few weekends, but this wasn't one of them.
The first DNF from Gasly was a surprise. We hadn't even started the race, not even the formation lap, and he was told to retire the car. That was a lot. And I wish we had seen him start, because he had the 50 place penalty, which was also crazy in itself. But I don't know. I was hoping Alpine could perform better this weekend. I had him in my predictions. He was in my top 10. So it's a bit unfortunate.
You're not the only one. Yeah, me
actually,
too.
Yeah, you had him on. You had him on P9. Actually, yeah.
Yeah, and I think it would have been it was a logical decision, because they have been doing fairly well in the last few races. But yeah, it was not a great weekend for Alpine with both drivers. What about Aston Martin? We've seen a little bit of a resurgence this weekend from them. A lot more pace in the car. Stroll having a pretty fantastic result for the race weekend, I must say. I mean, it was a pretty decent race for him altogether. And for Aston Martin to be back with both drivers earning points, I think is a pretty good result for them, considering the way that 2024 has panned out so far.
Yeah, that's true. He also had enough pace during qualifying. There were times when he was performing really well. Right before, I think, Q2, there was a time right before it started raining, he made a really good lap time, which was amazing.
Yeah, that's very true.
Yeah, it's good to see them get back a little bit. You're right. Last couple of weekends weren't great for them, but even starting from training sessions, they were both doing quite well. And I see we all had Alonso in our top 10 predictions. I see you both put him on P10. I had him even on P9. And their finishing positions were better than that. And actually, Stroll getting a higher finishing position again than Alonso, which has happened a couple of times recently. So, quite a good weekend for the Aston Martins. And I think it's fun to see that we've been talking about it last weekend as well in Austria, that it's basically four teams that are ahead of the rest, but then the final point scoring positions are up for grabs for the rest of the teams, the other six teams, and especially if you have people from those four best teams dropping it, like this weekend Perez and Leclerc. That means that there's basically four remaining positions to be fought for, and that's very interesting. So I think we can conclude that all in all, both at the very front of the grid, it's very interesting now, where it's hard to tell which car is the fastest in which weekend, in which track, and which conditions. Also talking about today, of course, temperatures were quite a bit lower than they have been in some of the previous races. If you take Spain and even Austria as an example, okay, Canada was also quite wet and not as warm, but I think all these conditions play a big role. And last year with Red Bull being so far ahead, I mean, for sure those weather conditions or other conditions, track specific conditions, also played somewhat of a role, but you hardly noticed it. But now it is noticeable. And behind those four best teams, it's also very exciting. So I think we've got a very, very exciting remainder of the season ahead of us. Do you want to go get into the scores a little bit? Yeah?
Yeah, yes. I think so. Tracy, you ready?
Yes, please. I'm excited.
All right. So, yeah, let's talk about the scores. We had a few more people playing the game this weekend. We had 951 people who joined. And we had a average score of 33, which is not so high. But, of course, yeah, also not such a very predictable race. So the lowest score this weekend was 4.5 points. And I'm going to ask both of you how many people you think had a correct podium prediction in the right order, with Hamilton on the front spot, Verstappen in second and Norris in third. And the one that gets closer gets to decide who goes first with guessing in the quiz. So, Sam, how many people do you think correctly predicted this podium in this order?
I'm going to say three.
I'm going to say six.
Nice. Okay, so there were five people who correctly predicted this podium. So that means Tracy, you get to pick who goes first in the quiz in a little bit. But not before we look at the winners of this weekend. So we have a shared P2, actually. So there were two people who scored 64.0 points. And one of them being a fellow country member of you, Sam, that was Anne Dubois, who finished on that second spot, and Alan Brito from Nicaragua, both of them scoring 64 points. And the winner of this weekend, actually with 10.5 points clear of P2, so scoring 74.5 points, was Manuel Enciso from Paraguay. And he was actually one of those people who had a correct podium. And Tracy, we had actually somebody from Kenya in the top 20 as well. That was Sharon Njoki on P19. So, not the highest point scoring finishes this weekend. But again, I'm usually quite excited about people scoring low points, because it means we see some chaos in the race. So, then we look at the points for the countries accumulated. And in the top 20, there's only one change, Belgium overtaking Germany for P16. And actually, Hungary enters the top 25 at the expense of Colombia. And Kenya overtakes Croatia for place 31. And the highest, the country that moves up the most amount of positions is Thailand, gaining seven places, and they're now in P78. There's a total of 133 countries, or there's people from 133 countries in the game currently. More exciting, let's look a little bit at the standings. And Rosario Finzi from France scores 27 this weekend, so he's still in P1, but he has a total of 701.6 points now, so his lead is slightly shrinking. Behind him in P2 is Annelie Boehmer from the Netherlands. She was she dropped last weekend to P3, but she regains that P2 position after scoring 37 points this weekend, and she now has a total of 680.1 points. And dropping to P3, so dropping one spot, is Taha Umar from Turkey, and he scored 32 points. So same top three, but P2 and P3 switch. So with the high score being 74.5 points, that means we don't have any new high scores worldwide, also no new high scores in any of the continents. So that actually brings us to the scores of, our three scores. And I don't know who we start with. Sam, shall we start with you?
Sure. We can start with me. I remember my podium very much so.
I think we had the same podium, so go ahead.
I'm not surprised, because we tend to think alike when it comes to predictions, but I went with Verstappen, Norris, Piastri.
That's right. How many points do you think that got you? Or do you already know? did you see?
I did not look. I don't think it was a lot. I don't know, but I'm going to wager that it wasn't a great result.
It was not, but I won't say that too loud, because I scored even fewer points this time. So you scored 29.6, which gave you P636 out of 951. So not great.
No.
Which means that in the standings, you move from P47. How many places do you think you're dropping?
Oh, you know, I almost don't want to guess, but I'm going to say at least 20.
No, it's not that many. With people scoring few points this weekend, the difference aren't that high. You're dropping to P52, which is actually the place that I finished in last year. So, you're only dropping five positions. It's not that bad.
Okay. Well, we have Hungary next.
Let me go to exactly. There's always the next race. Let's go to my score before we go to Tracy's, because mine was very similar to Sam. Same podium, as I mentioned, and only 27 points. And I was on P733. So you see, there's almost 100 places difference between the two of us, but only 2.6 points. So yeah, it was all very, very close together over there. I'm dropping from P22 to P27. That's actually where our previous guest was after last race. Shane was there. He's now actually moving up to P24. So a better weekend for him than it was for me. Which brings us to Tracy. Tracy, do you still remember what podium you predicted?
I had Max Hamilton and Norris. Good choices, right. But different Ooh. Order.
That's yeah, but bad. Having Hamilton on P2, that got you half of the points for that Hamilton scored. So that got you 12.5. Actually, you got 48.5 points this weekend, which is pretty good, because you with that you're at P32 this weekend.
Nice.
Yes.
Nice.
Yeah, it's a very decent result. And
this is a very good weekend for me.
Actually, you're also moving up in the standings quite a lot. So you were on P249 after Austria, and you're moving up 67 places. So you're now at P182.
Oh, nice.
Well done.
Good weekend for me.
Yeah, it is a good weekend for you all around, I would say. And let's see if, you know, we have a new rule for the last, I don't know, 4 or 5 podcasts or so, is that person who who wins the quiz listens to his national anthem as the outro of the podcast. So let's see if it can really be your weekend. And you were very close to guessing the right amount of people that had this podium correct. You went with 6, Sam went with 3, it was 5. So that means you can choose who goes first in the quiz. So in the quiz, we are going to we're going to go past all the point scoring positions, and you need to guess how many people this weekend in the Focus F1 game correctly predicted that person on that position. So we're going to start obviously with P1 Hamilton, and Tracy, you can choose either to go first or to let Sam go first.
Sam, go first.
All right. So how many people do you think, out of 951 people, had Hamilton on P1?
I'm going to say 100. I'm going to go a little bit higher, 121.
Okay. I think around, I'm going to go that high, around 67.
All right. Well, it wasn't that many people. So it was 29 people who went with the Hamilton win. But that means the first point goes to Tracy. 29 is close to 67 is to 121. So so Sam, time for you to go for the P2 with Verstappen there.
Okay.
Sam, you started first. So sorry, Tracy, you gotta go first on this one.
Verstappen. I know most people thought Norris could win and Max would be second, so I'm going to go for a higher number and say around 175.
That's a good guess. I'm going to go less than that, though, and I'm going to say 101.
There was actually quite a lot of people. I wouldn't have guessed this myself, but there was 359 people who put Verstappen on P2. I guess there was a lot of people who were putting Norris then on P1. I'm just guessing at this point. But that means a second point for Tracy.
Okay, and
and Sam, you're up for the highest finishing McLaren this weekend on P3, Norris.
Okay, I'm going to go with 185.
I'd go with, I don't know, most people expecting him to win or at least be P2. So I'm going to go for a lesser number, 140.
Well, that's the right way to go, because it was even fewer than 100. It was 75 people at Norris on P3. So another point for Tracy. Tracy, the next finishing position was P4 with the other McLaren, Piastri. How many people put Piastri on P4?
Piastri P4. I'm going to go with 20.
Okay, I'm going to go with 74.
Sam, you're scoring your first point this weekend. It's Well, besides the 29 points you already scored during the race, but it was 155 people. So it's 3 against 1, and okay. We move to P5 Sainz, who also scored fastest lap, but we're gonna get to fastest lap at the end. So I guess it's Sam again who needs to go first, right?
Yep.
Am I mixing things up now? Because
it's Sam.
Okay, all right. Sam, you go first.
I'm going to go with 75.
Okay, I was also going for a number near there, so I'll go with 102.
102. That means you're getting another point, Tracy, because it was 143.
Wow.
Now, before we get to Hülkenberg, I want to say that actually Hülkenberg finished on P6 also in the Austrian race. And let's also celebrate that score, because I mean, Hülkenberg's been consistently getting into the points, and even if he doesn't, he finishes P11, P12, but usually does get into the points. He's been having a great season, if you ask me, so far. Last race in Austria, we had only one person who correctly predicted Hülkenberg in P6. He finishes P6 again, so yeah, that. Tracy, how many people do you think had him there this time?
Let's go with one again.
Oh, one. Mm. Okay. I'm going to go higher than that. I am going to say 27.
Oh.
Well, it's more than one, but it's not that many more. It's five people. So actually,
wow,
gets Tracy another point. And another thing, what we usually do is if it's only so few people that get somebody right, we also have a look at who were the people who got it right. Actually, last time, interestingly, it was Alex McLean who had Hülkenberg on P6, but this time he didn't. So he's not one of those five people. But the five people that did were Jimmy Tran from Canada, were Camilo Sepúlveda from Chile, Joost Hofman from the Netherlands, Marcos Rodriguez from Uruguay, and Carlos Machuga from Puerto Rico. So those five people got the full 8 points for Hülkenberg on P6 in the game. And that brings us to P7 with Stroll. Sam.
I'm going to go quite low here and say actually five people, the same as the result above.
Okay, so you said five people. I'm not even going to go that high. I'm going to go 8.
Nice, and you get it right. It was 8 people.
Oh.
Wow. Tracy, yeah. You're on fire.
I'm on fire.
It's 6 against 1 already. So that brings us to the other Aston Martin, Alonso. Tracy, you get to go first.
I think I also kept Alonso at P8, so I'm going to go with a high number here and go with 82.
Okay, I'm going to go below you and say 65.
Okay, I got to say, Trace, you're really quite good at this. It was 85 people, so you got really close.
Wow.
Yes. Which brings us to Albon. Yeah, Sam, sorry. I know at this point I usually then say that you can't win it anymore, but that I wasn't allowed to say that anymore. So we just move on, all right?
Look, I think at this point, I mean, all credit to you, Tracy. You're doing very well at these predictions. Yeah. So, I mean,
I'm actually surprised myself.
All right. So next one is Albon P9, and it's my go, right? So I'm going to say 12.
Mm-hmm. 12, Albon P9. I'm going to say 22.
All right, well, I thought 12 was already pretty close to the right answer, but Tracy gets even closer. It was 19 people, so Tracy only 3 away, and Sam only 7 away, also very good. But again, I'm going to give this point to Tracy, which brings us to Tsunoda on P10.
Oh, that's me. I feel like so many people usually choose Tsunoda for P10, and we had 951 people predict, so I'm going to go with... I have very high number, around 320.
Okay, that's a high number. I'm going to go below you at 287.
It was 88 people. So
Wow.
Quite a few, but not that many. Not that many. So that's another point for Sam. Yeah. And we then get to Sainz, who pitted for softs because he had a lot of room towards Hülkenberg, and he set that fastest lap on the last lap of the race and got that point in. How many people had put in Carlos Sainz there? And Sam, you go first.
I'm not going to say a high number, so I'm going to stick to the 20s and say 22.
Mm-hmm. Sam, I don't think I'll go that high. Maybe 27.
All right. Well, it was only 10 people. So 10 people scored that 1 point for Sainz on fastest lap. None of us three had him there. I think, who did you go for fastest lap, actually? I went with Verstappen. I think you both went with Norris, not mistaken.
I believe so, yeah.
So, yeah, that means, that means, Tracy, you win it with, I think it's 7 against, no, it's 8 against 3.
Wow, very nice. Yes, congratulations to you. Looks like Lewis isn't the only one winning this weekend.
It really was your weekend.
It is my weekend.
So yeah, that means actually we finished the triple header, which was a lot of races in short succession, but I think it was a lot of fun. I think we've seen three great weekends. Spain was nice. Austria was extremely nice, and this was even nicer, I think. So I think it was all together very, very nice, and I think we got 2 weeks now to prepare for the Hungaroring, which again is going to be super interesting because I guess a bit of a different track compared to Silverstone. I mean, Silverstone is a lot of high-speed corners, and the Hungaroring not so much, a lot of medium to low speed corners, so going to be very interesting to see which car is fast over there.
So true. I can't wait to see if the new upgrades from the cars get to action in the next race, especially since we'll be having a break almost right after. So yeah.
Yes, Hungary is always an exciting track and race, so I'm very much looking forward to it. And but I think the break is well deserved at this point. It's been a triple header that, like you said, Anton, was quite exciting. So I think everybody, especially the teams, definitely need this little break before we get back into things towards the end of July.
Yeah, because we're going to have Hungary, then we're going to have Spa, and then we have the summer break. So two more races. And I think it's going to be interesting also for forecast because it's wide open right now, and it's going to be tough predicting who's going to get which win where and when and how. And well, let's just hope we get a lot of exciting racing.
I think it's becoming apparent that Max being P1 is not always going to be the obvious choice.
Yeah, exactly. That's exactly what I'm talking about.
Well, Tracy, it has been a pleasure to have you on the podcast and also to talk about the race this weekend, a very exciting one, as we've already discussed. And I think that means that without further ado, Anton, cue the anthem.